Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is your boy James, aka Hollywood J Black, live in the building once again. And this is the Overtime Sports Show, episode 101 on the podcast. We're doing this a little bit different. The podcast is going to be a completely type of different show than the live. There's going to be certain things that we do live on Facebook, but there's certain exclusive things that only the loyal can hear. And that is on this podcast right here. So, again, I'm your boy, Hollywood J Black. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's cut the BS. Let's get right to it. Let's get right to the show of shows. And, oh, I'm not talking about wrestling or WrestleMania, none of that. I'm talking about the show of shows that is currently the NBA. Now, for those that have been living under a rock, the NBA playoffs are going right now. We are in the conference finals of each respective conference. The best part about this is that the Western Conference Finals just recently got started. The Eastern Conference Finals actually have been in full swing. Yesterday, they actually had to take a break, no games at all. So the Western Conference Finals can actually get caught up to the Eastern Conference Finals. So the Eastern Conference Cats actually got a little bit of a break. A little bit of, you know, pat on the back, like, we got this from here, y'all. Don't even worry about it. But the fact of the matter is this. I think the NBA is in a good place. I think that the NBA is right where it needs to be. I think that the NBA, and all the drama aside, everybody talks about the ratings are down. It's been down, and how you know, the people politicizing the NBA, people, you know, taking a stand for Black Matters and things like that that have affected the NBA. And I'm here to tell you from the bottom of my heart that that is complete bullshit. So if the NBA has been in a steady ratings decline since 2010, they said it's lost 45% of its viewers since 2010. You have to look at a lot of things. First and foremost, remember, I want to say 2010 was a kind of a shift of things on how things were supposed to be. I think 2010 is around where, or 2010, 2011 is where LeBron had, he shifted over to the Heat. LeBron kind of built his super team. And I think the whole thing about it is that maybe some people did tune out, not because of LeBron itself, which I don't think that's what it is. We've actually lost a kind of lot of access to like local things. The NBA is hard to picture. I remember I want to say it was the early 2000s when NBA was on TNT when it was on cable before ESPN had the contract. And it was, everybody knew that the NBA was on TV Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Remember that whole big campaign? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then, you know, you had the weekend games with the NBA song on NBC. Remember those days? Those days are gone. You might catch it on ABC, but it hasn't been on ABC for a minute. I think since the bubble, it hasn't been on ABC. It's been an ESPN thing only, which is weird, especially because we're in playoff form. That's kind of just like a really, really strange thing not to have the playoffs on local television. But aside from all those factors, everybody is missing the biggest component in all of this. Is the rise of non-conventional television. Nielsen boxes, I think just recently, Nielsen just went on YouTube TV, which is, they have a lot of users. Nielsen was never on Sony PlayStation TV when it had its PlayStation TV. Philo doesn't show sports nor local, so that doesn't count. They just recently started partnering with Hulu Live TV. But remember, people have just been like, oh, also the other thing, NBA League Pass does not count towards local viewers. So if you have NBA League Pass, that's money that the NBA already pays for. I think my understanding is that League Pass subscriptions are actually up as opposed to down. Because all these TV contracts, like here in Orlando. Orlando before maybe a few years ago was sorry as shit. The Magic. Couldn't get the Magic on TV because of blackouts locally here in Orlando until they started getting good. And then, of course, they'd show them on local TV more consistently and actually advertise them because they actually want you to watch. But that myth and BS about ratings down, when there's a lot of places that you don't necessarily need to, you know, that don't necessarily take Nielsen ratings into account. Also, there's the fact that, you know, a lot more people are having to work. There's no time to rest. There's no rest for the weary. I like to take you to House of Highlights. I'm going to just pull up a random highlight. I'm going to go to House of Highlights right now. And I'm going to share. House of Highlights is a wonderful YouTube channel. It's where I get some of my highlights from. Shout out to the owners of House of Highlights and the creators of House of Highlights. They are some geniuses and some gods over there. But give me a second here. I'm going to pull up, because I got to pull up some streaming numbers. Oh, give me a second. It's pulling up House of Highlights. We're getting there, y'all. So House of Highlights has 2.6 million subscribers. Now, if you know any, if anybody knows anything about House of Highlights, it takes a 2.5 hour game and condenses it down into about 7 to 8 minutes of highlights. For example, you check out a couple days ago, the Nuggets highlights. In itself got 146,000. Nuggets Lakers had 146,000 views. But previously, there's highlights that get 289,000 views. Nuggets versus Clippers got 300,000 views in the Game 7. And they're full game highlights. That means every made shot, every major play is condensed down into that small amount of time. Clippers Nuggets, 322,000 views. Heat Celtics, 200,000 views. And we can go back. I remember when I was pulling these highlights, back when the season was going, these highlights were getting, you know, 500, 600, 700,000 views. And they only just not only do this, they do other highlights too. They have their own podcast that they do. NBA players they come on the show and they're all really respected and loved. There was the one where the Gordon Hayward crashes a high school basketball team. Now, House of Highlights isn't the only option in this scenario, but they're a major option because of how they condense the game and show it. So the thought is that if I'm working my black ass off and I can't catch a game, especially if I'm having to hold down two jobs because apparently unemployment, not me, but people, I can't do unemployment. Shit, what am I supposed to do? Now I've got to do both jobs, both two shitty jobs, and I'm out until 11 o'clock at night. Game's already off, gone. Maybe 12, 1 o'clock at night. And then there's also the West Coast, which is still 10 o'clock out there, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. If I have these high, like, if I want to see the game, do I want to go watch the whole game? Sit there, DVR, 2.5 hours? Or do I go on YouTube, pull up a highlight, and watch 10 minutes of the game, 10 minutes of the best game? And again, they're not just here. They're on Facebook, And House of Highlights isn't exclusive to doing highlights, but they do it better than anybody else. Shout out to House of Highlights. But the reality is that in today's world, where we have to do two jobs, we don't have the time to sit for 2.5 hours. I barely have time to sit for an hour to play a raid in my favorite video game, Destiny. I don't have time to do this rigmarole, this BS, this mess. I got time for none of that. So you get in where you fit in. I barely have time to watch wrestling. Get in where you fit in. So the NBA ratings decline may not necessarily have to do with the fact that that people are not watching the product, or more have to do with the fact that people, especially us millennials, who have to work two jobs in order to survive and take care of a family, we don't have time anymore. We don't have time to sit down for 2.5 hours anymore. We can't even go to the bar to watch the game. Bars are fucking closed. So what do we do? These companies, House of Highlights, I know Highlight Haven, other places, they fulfill a need. And then you got to understand that they fulfill a need that isn't necessarily given automatically. And so you got to do what you got to do. So Mr. Eric Trump Jr., Donald Trump, I don't give a fuck who the fuck he is. Talk about 45%. You're speaking in semantics. And you're talking about people are boycotting the NBA. Good. We didn't watch your ass there anyway. We just didn't. We didn't really care if Eric Trump gives a damn about the NBA. So let's talk about the playoffs. Give me a second here. We're in a good place. Like I said, they've taken a break. Now we're going to be back in full tilt. By the time you hear this, it'll be game three of the Lakers game. And then we'll be going to game four the Celtics squad, Celtics game. That's kind of just where we're at right now. Excuse me. I'm a little bit distracted. But I'm sorry. So we're going in the Celtics Heat, which is the best series out of both of these two series. Everybody should be paying attention to Celtics Heat. I kept telling you, this is probably going to go to seven. The Toronto didn't want to smoke. I'm glad the Celtics actually finally won one, because I'm like, if Miami was going to come through and sweep or one game everybody, it was going to be nasty. But this Celtics team, now that they have Gordon Hayward back, now that they've kind of eased in Kemba and Marcus Smart, they pulled the Marcus Smart card out. Now it's on like Donkey Kong. This is about to be a real interesting series now. We're gonna go the full ride. We're going seven. I don't know who takes it. My hands are tied in this one. Like, I really want to say that Miami is gonna pull up and win this out. I don't know. I can't call it. Although I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because they're the best full team in the playoffs right now. And you can quote me on that. As a full team. And the way that they played basketball, they ain't nobody better. Period. But 1A is obviously Boston. And Boston, like we talked about this, the deepest team in the NBA. When Marcus Smart comes off the bench, Brad Wanamaker comes off the bench. Hell, if they really, really wanted to, they got Taco Fall just sitting there waiting to play in a game. You know, deepest team in the NBA, point blank, period. This is a slugfest, and it's going to go the distance. Get your popcorn ready. It's going to seven, standing for the long haul. Now, on the other side of the pond, we have, but when we last talked, I think when we last spoke and we last had this podcast, Denver was on its way back. So the last time we talked, when we did the show, Denver was down by 7. They ended up winning by 18. completing back the 3-1, coming back from a 3-1 lead, coming back from a 3-1 deficit, beating the Clippers, sending the Clippers home. Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, I love them boys. They made them boys eat fucking crow. Stuffed, smothered crow. You gotta love it. I was here for it, damn it, shit. And listen. A lot of times, you know, people, they got their thoughts. This is the thoughts of my mind is very simple. It's something else. It's something else. The reality of the situation, though, is that they've now run into a Lakers team that now has Rajon Rondo back, and Rajon Rondo is running circles around everybody. Rajon Rondo has been sitting, trying to get healthy, doing what he needs to do. He showed up in the last part of the series against the Rockets, and your boy is on one. It's going to be a long fucking series for them. And by long, I mean short. I'm talking about long as in the minutes. Denver, I believe, is tired. After completing that 3-1 comeback, I just think that they're tired. I think that they're worn out. I don't think they have enough gas to compete with the Lakers because they got to figure – they came close. Last night would have probably been – the night before would have been their best chance to stick a fork – well, not stick a fork, but put a dagger in the back of L.A. and make this a series. And AD with that shot and then yell Kobe at the end? I don't know. I think this is their last shot. I think this one, I want to say a sweep because LA looks vulnerable, but then you have to ask yourself if Denver does take the next one and then the Lakers take the next one, do the Nuggets complete another 3-1? They've come back from 3-1 twice now. Can they do a third time's a charm? Make it to the finals? That'll be something to see. Meanwhile, I just want to say, before we transition to the next section, that I am an advocate for bubble basketball. Like, I love it. Listen. Bubble basketball has created some of the most exciting moments, and I think they should do it like the Final Four. And I think that's what it reminds me of. You got two arenas, two basketball arenas there, and you can always switch back and forth. If they did the Eastern Conference games in one section and then the Western Conference games in another section, I would be all fucking for it. I think that should be a thing. Just lock down the first part of the summer at Disney with NBA basketball players and call it. Or NBA should make their own bubble. Imagine a place. It's like an NBA land, right, where basketball is played all the time. And maybe a few, some exclusive games, maybe a few once a week. That way you get the most use out of it. You get some high-profile teams there to play. That would be awesome. I think that would be a nice little touch. Nice little ditty, you know? But this bubble basketball has been legit because there's no home court advantage. It's 1-8. Anybody and everybody has a shot. You limit travel. You don't have to get that travel fatigue, anything like that. Everybody gets one spot to get taken care of, to get all their needs addressed, and then you're good. I would be down for that. If they made a bubble, I made a spot where there's a bubble, I would be lit. That would be something that I would love to see in a permanent basis. Let me see. So, that's part one. Let me go ahead and go down. We got the next part of the show. So after the break, after the ad, we're going to go straight into the main feature of this show, which is the NCAA fallout. Not fallout. NCAA football and how COVID has been affecting it. I really want to – that's a conversation. I've done a series documentary on it and kind of did some of the numbers on it. I hope you guys stay in after this part. We're going to go to the break. Then we're going to come back with some NCAA. And then after that, we get into the NFL fallout. It's going to be an awesome show. Stay tuned. This is the Overtime Sports Show. Before we get to the next part of the show, it's ad time. You know what that means? We got to pay the bills. So just want to let you guys know that Sinful Black Entertainment is now being sponsored by Raise Energy Drink. Sinful Black Gaming is now taking off. And sometimes you need to recharge. You need to get your system back up and running. You know, me, I do this podcast. We do the sports show. Big Sin does all the gaming stuff. And we post memes and we do all kinds of crazy shit. So between there, ain't got time for a lot of sleep. But we do need to kick that edge in. We got Raise Energy Drink. My favorite flavor, sour gummy worm. Pop this baby open. We're about to get into some deep ish. Oh, yeah. It's time to go. That's Raise Energy Drink. Make sure you check out the link. I'm going to post it down in the comments. Buy so I can pay my bills, damn it. Shit, that's all you need to know about it. Don't worry about anything else. Buy Raise Energy Drink and click on the link inside the bottom of the podcast. Check it out. Rep Sports, our code is Sinful Black TV. Make sure you get that. It's Sinful Black TV. Make sure you use that code. So let's get right to it. Now, we're 2 weeks to the NFL season. We're going to have our NFL fallout show for week two. After this, but a lot of people are starting to realize that NCAA football is actually back. NCAA football said they took the reins. They came back, I believe, it was a week or two prior to the NFL season starting. Things have gotten crazy. The last I had heard, we're in the middle of August, beginning of August. It wasn't going to be no NCAA season. We had a whole Pac-12 and Big Ten. They said, you know what? We good, fam. We don't want none of this smoke. We don't want none of this. And yet, here we are. SEC plays this weekend, my birthday weekend. SEC's back in competition. Auburn is on deck at home. Florida's in action. Bama's in action. Action is in action like Action Jackson. You know what I'm saying? And just like, we're at this point where, what the hell? What the hell are y'all thinking? See, the NFL is a different animal, okay? The NFL has, you know, these grown men, and they have enough money behind them to be able to follow all these protocols between all 32 NFL teams. College football has over 100 teams in it. And so when you're dealing with over 100 teams, I'm talking about almost 100 teams in Division 1A. Or as they say, FBS teams. We're not even talking about the various teams in Division 1 AA, also known as FCS teams. And yet somehow, some way, we decided that we were going to play football. So I actually had to do the numbers on a little bit. But before I get into the numbers, go ahead and check out this report real quick that we just did. It's going to break down a lot of stuff. And then we're going to get right into the numbers. So roll the beautiful bean footage.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, is slowly burning, and we are seeing the handsomely paid leaders of this institution trying to protect their assets at all costs. The decay is happening in real time with the long-standing fight of athlete empowerment gaining traction. However, with coronavirus deaths continuing to mount, realistic questions loom. First, will there be a college football season? And second, what protection do the players have? Well, because of lawmakers' lack of action in combating the virus, the athletes took matters into their own hands. The We Are United campaign was launched, a player activist group with a list of demands, and now they face backlash from schools. Take Cassidy Wood, for example. A redshirt sophomore wideout, Woods was diagnosed with sickle cell and told his coach via phone he was opting out. "I've got nothing wrong with that," Coach Rolovich replied to him. Then he asked Woods a question. Was he joining the Pac-12 Conference Unity Group? "Yes, sir," Woods said. "Well," the coach said, "that would be a problem." Woods was told to clean out his locker. Same went for another player. Dallas Hobbs, a redshirt junior defensive end, all because they had joined We Are United. Wood said several teammates were cowed into not opting out because he said they felt threatened. In the SEC, a virtual call was held between conference leaders, players, and medical personnel. When one player asked for so much unknown in the air right now, is it worth having a football season without certainty? SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who made $2.5 million in 2018, responded with a BS, allow me to attempt a philosophical response without saying these four words, shut up in football. Mississippi linebacker Momo Sanogo brought up a very real problem. Why bring students back to campus and keep class sizes relatively large when my peers will be going to bars? Their answer was appalling. If students don't come back to campus, then the chances of having a football season are almost zero. Their next one, be a better leader. The best thing that you can do is try to encourage others to act more responsibly and not put yourself in those kinds of situations. Sit at the back of classrooms and don't engage in close conversations. The World Health Organization rebukes this sentiment, per the New York Times. In the Big Ten, the novel coronavirus was found in 15 Rutgers players, 8 Penn State players, 16 Michigan State athletes. Thus, players are demanding to have their voices heard.
The number one thing we talk about that players have at their disposal, maybe the only thing that they have at their disposal when it comes to really exercising leverage, is withholding their services. That's what they have in their back pocket at all times.
We believe a football season under these conditions would be reckless and put us at needless risk, they wrote. Recently, UConn admitted the price is too steep for its players and shut down the season. Idaho's football players do not want to play this year. Per Sports Illustrated, there's no better example of NCAA sports' racial exploitation than colleges marching their football players into the COVID-19 pandemic without the enforcement of any health and safety standards in pursuit of football revenue that players themselves will never see, said Ramoga Huma, executive director of the would-be college athlete union, the National College Players Association.
The UConn football season is over before it could get started, with a schedule that was already in shambles after several canceled games and the ongoing concerns related to coronavirus being transferred through close contact. UConn officially canceled its football season today. It was set to be the first season for the Huskies as an independent program. On that note, we bring in our guy, the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum. Paul, thank you so much for being with us. And a lot to get into here. Obviously, this one's personal for me, UConn alum, and I'm a season ticket holder, men's and women's basketball and football. And clearly, there's no season. So I want you to touch on that, and then I want to get into some of the other safety protocols going around with the other conferences. What was your reaction when you heard that?
It's interesting, Molly, you hear about every other conference playing because of financial reasons. I think UConn canceled because of financial reasons. They are in debt right now. They're in the transfer of leagues, as you well know. Their schedule had been decimated, and I think they made the right call, just saying it's not worth it. We're going to lose more money. We don't really want to invest in this season because it's going to be a lost cause anyway. What the bigger story in college football is, will middle-of-the-pack schools follow them? I think they will. And then you have a couple of other things happening. You have the Big Ten announcing their schedule today on Labor Day weekend. So think about this for a second. The Big 12 is going to start on August 28th. The next week, the Big Ten will start, as will the ACC. And then you go to the end of the month, of September 26th, when the Pac-12 and the SEC. So anyone who doesn't believe that college football is a royal mess, think about the fact that the college football season will open over a 5-week stretch. And the people at the end, I believe, are the smartest. Their fans may not be happy about this, but Molly, I think at the back end conferences want to see what happens at the front end, meaning if those week zero games don't go well, if when the Big Ten starts, you start seeing outbreaks and you have to shut programs down temporarily, you may see the whole thing collapse. And there's one more thing here. Safety. There was a story coming out of Colorado yesterday. A couple of players told a newspaper out there that the Colorado State coaches were discouraging them from being honest about testing positive for COVID. There were reports that their contact tracing was being finagled, that they were not social distancing. Same thing came out of the player from Virginia Tech, which I discussed with you guys on Monday, that he complained that it wasn't safe. And for all the hot air that college administrators want to say that safety is the first issue, there are some cracks out there, and I don't think this is getting enough attention.
What this is really shining a light on, it seems to me, is the fact that that is all a sham, that the decisions are made strictly about business, that whenever they talk about their concern for the student athletes, it's utter hypocrisy, just nonsense. But I don't know if it's ever been laid as bare as it is right now during this pandemic under these conditions. What do you think the lasting effect of this on the college game could be?
Well, I think that that's the ultimate question. And I think ultimately, if you're a college president, and Max, we've all sat through graduation and commencement and listened to college presidents talk about the integrity of the academic institution. If one of these presidents sign off on the current plan and the worst thing happens, something catastrophic, something cataclysmic occurs, and I think it's pretty easy to figure out what that is, then what do they say then? I'm not even talking about the liability. I don't understand all the machinations of where that goes, but that is another river to cross here. But you're talking about possibly a stain on this sport that can never be changed irreparably. Damaged. And I think that's a major concern. Right now, I still think the plans are everyone's swimming across the river and trying to get to the other side, meaning the opening weekend. But all the conversation about we have it under control, we have the protocols, I think is nonsensical. We're still seeing outbreaks across the board. Rutgers had a severe outbreak this week. You've read about other ones. And the thing that concerns me the most is the lack of transparency. Some schools are admitting, yes, we've had issues. We put out 417 tests and we've had four positives, just like Major League Baseball, just like the NFL, just like the NBA. But in college football, it's up to the individual schools. And I've heard horror stories at some schools where the coaches simply don't care. Football coaches are like a lot of other people in athletics, but they're a little bit more stringent. They're a little bit more militaristic. And I'm concerned that a lot of coaches are looking the other way. Players are intimidated by these coaches. You're seeing some opt-out, but not to the degree that we've seen in the NFL. And ultimately, some idiotic football coach is going to bring the whole system down if we're not careful.
Heather, what authority does the NCAA have over college football?
It doesn't have any. It doesn't have any, unless you're talking about the FCS. That's where they have the authority, and that's one of the championships, one of the 22 NCAA fall championships that will not be played this year because less than 50% of teams are going to be participating in sports.
But sometimes all of us know that there are certain situations that are just too big for you to sit idly by and throw your hands up. And if the medical advisors that we talked about earlier, I think it was Dr. Del Rio, is saying that this is the Titanic, I assume that he's telling Mark Emmert the same thing, if not more aggressively. And if Mark Emmert hears that from him and his decision is to come up and say, my hands are tied, I can do nothing about it. And if it's true, what Paul is suggesting, that it's about preserving his salary, that's something that I'd be uncomfortable living with. And I hope that Mark Emmert can do some soul searching and figure out if this is something that he feels strongly enough about. If the health and safety of his players is something he feels strongly enough about, that he's going to listen to the medical advisor who says this is the Titanic and not allow players to board the Titanic for a measly $3 million. Like, he's already made plenty of money. I'm sure he's fine. So go ahead. If this is what you are hearing and this is what you genuinely believe, stand up and put them out there and say, this is not safe.
All right. So now that you checked out all that, let's go into some numbers real quick. Handy dandy notepad, because some things need to be written down to be believed. And when I checked to look at these numbers, I was shocked because that made me understand what Division I FBS teams really have to lose. Okay, so these numbers I'm going to bring to you is the annual revenue that college sports brings in, and what this money has to be spent. Well, let me rephrase that. What their expenditures are on a year-by-year basis. Now, there's a lot of things to take into consideration because this is back in 2018. The numbers for 2019 are so ridiculous that they haven't even been they haven't even been checked. But if you look up the Knight Report, The Knight Report will tell you anything, that everything that you need to know. It goes back many, many years. So if you ever want to look out to see what colleges are spending on education, check out the Knight Report. It'll tell you everything. Now, out of all colleges, FBS colleges, Division 1A, as we used to refer to, they have spent $8.7 billion. No, not million. Billion. Between all those teams in FBS, $8.7 billion. Now, out of all that money, this is how it breaks down. $1.9 billion for facilities. $1.5 billion for coaches' salary. $1.5 billion, for support and admin compensation. You know, the guys that aren't coaches, you know. $1.2 billion in scholarships and student aid and grants and all that jazz. $964 million in game expenses. 2% in competition guarantees. Now, the competition guarantee is essentially, if I'm Alabama and I want to play Bougie State University, I'm going to pay Bougie State University to have to do all this. So that's already worked in. So 2% of that $8.7 billion is already going to comp guarantees. 2% is involved in recruiting. And 11%, which is around $955 million, is operating costs. Okay? That's $8.7 billion across the entirety of FBS college teams. Now, this is where the fun gets in. So remember, I've always told you that SEC are the big dogs of college football and college sports in general, that nothing moves unless the SEC moves. I'm going to break it down to you right now. And this is kind of where you have to ask yourself a few questions. So I'm going to break down the numbers for you. So let's talk about the – remember, so facilities across all of college football is $1.9 billion. Out of that, the SEC spends – out of $8.7 billion, the SEC is owed $1.8 billion, or spends $1.8 billion, excuse me. Out of that $1.8 billion, $405 million goes to facilities. So that means that 20% of the operating costs to run the facilities belong to the SEC. $351 million in support and admin compensation. That means that 20% belongs to the SEC. Coaches' salaries. Coaches' compensation. All of it belongs to the SEC, $320 million. $200 million for game expenses, about 15% belongs to the SEC. $177 million in scholarships and student aid. That's a little bit over 10% belongs to the SEC. Recruiting. I forgot to run the numbers on recruiting, but that's $32 million in the SEC alone. $42 million in comp guarantees. And 10%. Oh, there was something on there. 10% of all the operating costs, $200 million. Actually, no, let me rephrase that. $200 million out of the $950, 20% of the operating costs that are expended belong to the SEC. And you wonder why, and you ask yourself, why are the SEC the big dogs of college football? It's because they count for 20% of everybody's budget. Nothing moves without the SEC. So if the SEC says we're playing football, guess who's playing football? Everybody's playing damn football. Remember, the Pac-12 runs the state. They said we're not going to play football. The Big Ten says we're not going to play football. The SEC says we ride at dawn, bitches. And they hop on their horse and they just play freaking football. Now, there's some things that we got to talk about here because, you know, we're a complete sports network, a sports podcast. We're complete. Although we're not as like complete as we should be, but we can't leave out the FCS. We can't leave out the FCS and their expenditures. Everybody says FCS are small schools. You're right. They are small schools. But let's not act like there's a starting quarterback by the name of Carson Wentz that went to an FCS school. There's a Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer by the name of Steve McNair who went to an FCS school. Corey Dillon went to an FCS school before he got transferred to Washington. The FCS actually freaking matters. In spite of what you think, the FCS matters. Matters how, in fact? I'll tell you how. FCS, as a totality, is about 25% of what the FBS spends. But guess, watch how this money. So remember, when we first talked about this, the FBS, they spend $1.9 billion on facilities. We said that, right? The FBS. That's the most, that's the highest expenditure. So the players are the number fourth expenditure, right? In FCS, the number one expenditure are players, $380 million. Coaches, they get are $258 million. Facilities, $248 million. Support admin staff, $191 million. Game and travel, $156 million. Medical, $23 million. Recruiting, $20 million. And comp guarantees, competition guarantees, $10 million. $10 million. So you have, you like, okay, well, you know, there's still some money, $1.4 billion. That's $1.4 billion they ain't got to spend, right? Yes, but here's the thing. So for whatever you put out, you got to put back in, right? So my understanding, and we're going to, as you heard the report, you saw the news, you seen it. You saw where the young lady said that the NCAA fully controls or mostly controls how the FCS operates. So the NCAA knows that this is a serious issue, that coronavirus and COVID-19 is a serious issue to the point where their team said, nah, we good, we're not playing. They're willing to put $1.4 billion, because remember, out of this $1.4 billion that they have to spend, they make the money back. Let me tell you, I can tell you right now. Give me a second. I will tell you right now. So where the money comes from. So out of that $1.8 billion, out of that $1.4 billion that they put out, $1.4 billion comes back in, or $1.39. So the FCS actually loses money for the NCAA every year. There's teams that are in the red every single year and pray that they have to make it. This is no joke. Meanwhile, in FBS, it's not like that. What? Yes, 25 schools actually make a complete and total profit. So out of that $8.7 billion, they make, and oh yeah, out of the $8.6 billion, they make $8.7 billion. So they end up with another $100 million in profit. Now there's teams that aren't going to make a profit. I'm pretty sure Vanderbilt hasn't been good since Jay Cutler left. Tennessee hasn't been shit. They've been even keeled. They're the Miami Dolphins. They're 6-6. You know, whatever the heck they are, whatever they do, they don't win much. That's the SEC alone. There's teams like Arkansas that are good 1 year and shitty for seven. There are teams like, I gotta think, University of Alabama, Birmingham. There are teams like Florida Atlantic, all them teams that can barely fill a stadium and yet somehow can give 80 kids a scholarship. How does that work? I don't get how it works. I'm still perplexed. I'm flabbergasted. I don't know how this thing works. It's a trip, but it somehow works. And still, when you look at the math, when you do the numbers, when you do everything that you're supposed to do, you're like, this is why. $8.7 billion are on the line. That's how much money the college football makes. $8.7 billion. This is why Division I FBS is not going to stop playing. They're going to find a way to play. They got to get their hands on $8.7 billion. You got to pay these athletes that are going to school. They got to bring in revenue. And it sucks because they're not bringing any revenue, stadium revenue, because can't nobody come to the stadium. Can't nobody come to the games. So the TV contracts are all that left. That's what pays these bills. And without no games, there's no TV contracts. Without no TV contracts, they can't pay the scholarships. Without no scholarships, there are no players. And without no players, there's no football. Without no football, it's a motherfucking problem for a lot of these teams. Alabama, outside of football, is maybe good at like four or five other different sports. Same as Florida. Same as, you know, teams like Stanford, you know, UCLA, USC, that are always getting these shots. And yet and still, somehow, some way, we end up right back where we are with the NCAA making a bunch of money. I don't take my word for it. Let me rephrase that. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave the kids, the FCS kids? The kids that chose the smaller colleges because they were closer to home, because they were recruited very well by these smaller colleges. They were offered these full rides. They were ready to play some football. FCS is the heart and soul of what I think college football really is. That's what's left because they play it for the love of the game because you don't know whether they're going to get drafted or not. But they play it for the love of the game. So the next segment that we got on deck, I got a special guest. He is the number one fastest player in the state of Nevada. He is a track champion. He is the fastest corner in Nevada high school football history. His name is Devin Perkins, and he's coming up with me and joining me next on the Overtime Sports Show. Pay the bills, baby. Let's go. Right now, tonight, I have an actual special guest here. Mr. Devin Perkins, would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself? Let the people know who you are.
My name is Devin Perkins. I'm from Las Vegas. I went to Las Vegas High School. I now attend Dixie State University. I play defensive back corner.
Awesome, awesome. And I've actually taken a look at a few of your highlight videos. I am very impressed by your work that you've done. So like, I'm really excited to actually have you here because this is actually a unique take of, you know, college athletes and what they're going through regarding, you know, coronavirus and everything that's been going on. You are actually going to a college that it's in Division I, it's a Division I school, but it's an FCS school, and all FCS has basically just kind of canceled their season. Tell me about when you first chose Dixie. Like, who are the colleges that actually recruited you? And then when you chose Dixie, why did you choose Dixie?
I was recruited by MDU, Minnesota Duluth, Eastern New Mexico, Ottawa University, Western Colorado University, and University of UMary. And Dixie, those are good schools. But Dixie, I chose Dixie because the visit just set it off for me. But initially it was the financial situation, full ride scholarship. I live in an apartment with my mom's three little sisters. So just take that weight off my mom's.
That's good. That's good. So you know about the history of Dixie State and a few of the more famous athletes that have went there, including one of my favorite running backs, Corey Dillon. He went there for a few years before he transferred up to Washington, but he set the world on fire when he was down in Dixie. You plan on setting the world on fire just like he did, or at least doing what you can, right?
I'm going to do what I can. Yes, sir. That's what I'm here for.
That's good. Now, this was back in March. March 11th, 12th is kind of when coronavirus hit, right? And so basically everything just started shutting down. Had you made your decision you were going to Dixie before then, or was this well after that?
Yes, I made my decision by then.
Okay. So when coronavirus hit, did they talk to you about any kind of short-term things, any long-term things? What was their plan initially when this all happened?
in the moment, we were just going step by step with it. We would get on Zoom meetings, go over film, do what we could. As far as getting out there, they planned on getting us out there like as early as we could, which was, I believe, June 12th or July 12th.
Okay.
So that's all we had new from there. But before then, we were just watching film, going over techniques, and just learning what we could.
Okay. Now, did they, I would take it at this point, they were effectively communicating because you said they were reaching out by Zoom, just kind of wanted you up there as early as June, as early as you could. So it seems like they were very effective in letting you know what the intentions was, because I would think at that time they still thought about playing. I know nobody talked about a season being shut down until August. So June was kind of like, oh, we're fresh. Maybe we're going to come out of this quarantine because state shut down, everything else. And so the still feeling was like, we're going to play football once we get this thing sorted out.
Yes, sir. That was the mindset.
All right. So when August hit, So when August hit and the FCS, all the FCS teams, Big Sky Conference, who are like the SEC of FCS conference, when they said, hey, I think we're not going to do this, we're going to hold off until the spring. I take it around that time, that's when your coaches let you know that there might not be a season coming. What was your initial thoughts about it?
Personally, I took that was a blessing in disguise for me. Coming in as a freshman, it gives me opportunity to get better, bigger, faster, stronger, learn more, just know more knowledge. So in that way, it's a blessing to me.
That's good. That's good. Have you been studying up on the film on the opponents that Dixie plays more frequently? I know they play Southern Utah every year. That's a huge rivalry up there every year. And then, of course, I know that they started getting into – well, they're technically in the Western Athletic Conference, but they don't have to play all their conference opponents. That's my understanding, because they're independent when it comes to FCS. But you've been looking up film on the opponents. I guess you would only have last year's film at this point, right, because of the season. Have you been studying up, learning the playbook, and how has that been coming along for you?
Yeah, we go over it in practice, film. We're taking this time to learn everything. Like, we're going over everything. SUU, Sac State, Weber, all those schools. We've been watching film, studying up on them.
Okay.
Just preparing.
All right. That's good. That's good, man. That's really awesome. All right. So your mom was telling me that, I've seen a bunch of photos that, you know, you guys had a little, you have some friends up there from Vegas that you kind of were just like tight-knit. You guys all went to get, you know, got scholarships, went to college around the same time. Have you been communicating with them? What has their experience been like going through all of this?
I've been in touch. We had, you know, our little LCA group, Lights, Camera, Action Boys.
I like that. There you go. I like that.
Yeah. But, one of my brothers, my friend, but, you know, Miles Davis, BYU, he's living it up over there. Victory David, he went to Western Colorado. Okay. Keontae Scott, he's at Snow College. We've all been keeping in touch. We all keep in touch, FaceTime, like family little FaceTime calls and stuff.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
It takes your mind off of everything. Because at the end of the day, y'all still brothers, right? Y'all still played on the field. Y'all still went to war, you know what I'm saying, side by side, you know, every Thursday, Friday nights, you know what I'm saying? So it's really, really good to get to have that communication. So outside of the football stuff, school, have you been busy? I know school started up August, September. So getting used to classes, and because I'm like, outside of football, you still have to go to school. So how's that been going? How has that transition been doing?
It's a lot. It's a lot of work. it's a lot of time management. But, you know, study hall, mandatory. So I just make sure I just keep up in school, keep school up so I could just not worry about not having to be ineligible. But, coming from high school, I learned that school is the most important thing. I learned that the hard way. So I got to make sure I'm on that.
Yeah,
but it's different, but it's not unbearable. It's not unbearable.
That's good. Cause when I went in, I had Monday, Wednesday, Friday, certain classes, and then Tuesday, Thursday, certain classes, and then I just had to kind of just balance that out. And that was different, especially coming from Vegas, where you know you had six or seven classes in a day.
Yeah.
And so I definitely understand that, but I'm glad that you're balancing that out. That's real good. It's like you said, school first, because you know they give you the scholarship, but you got to maintain that, you know, with your school and you play on the field and everything like that. So that's good. So the one thing that I've been hearing, especially because of with the FCS, is that they're trying to make a push to the spring to play the season out. Now, if this does happen, and if that is a possibility, is that something that you're looking forward to? Or you think that you're field ready? Is just something you got to go through a training process? How would that affect you in any way?
As far as a season, every day we just, like I said, we practicing and preparing for our team, for our possible schedule, and all that stuff like that. Basically, all we do, like, we just prepare at practice, and we every day we come in, try to find out if we got an update on the season.
Yeah.
But for the moment, I'm just getting bigger. I mean, I've been getting better and taking it day by day.
Okay. That's good. So, your mom was telling me about because growing up, I had corners that I liked. I had corners I always wanted to play against. I said, if I got into the pros, I want to hit Deion Sanders. You know what I'm saying? You know, I want to hit Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy. That didn't happen, but I know as a corner, there are corners that inspire you. The current generation of corners that we have, of course, we have, what is his name? Darrell Revis is the last generation corner. This year's biggest corner is Jalen Ramsey. Your mom's told me that you're a big Jalen Ramsey fan, man.
Yes, sir.
What do you take away from him? Like, so when you see him on the field and you see him line up, what are some things that you're looking at when you see him play? Anything that he does in particular that be like, yeah, I got to get that, or you know what I'm saying? I got to relate to that. I see what he sees. Now I understand that. Like, how does that go with you when you see him play?
For one, his demeanor and confidence is top tier. His swagger on the field when he play. He's an overall great player. And to top that $100 million contract deal, that's just my everyday motivation to be great. And looking up to him, that's a great role model for me.
That's good. No, I like that. I like Jalen Ramsey. One, he went to Florida State. That's my dad's school. That was kind of the school I took on as my favorite school. And two, like just like you said, that swagger. When he comes on, it's kind of like how Deion Sanders was in the 90s. You knew he wasn't playing around. You knew you were in for a long day when you lined up against Jalen Ramsey. Hey, I've seen your film, man. Listen, you anticipate things very well. Your speed, I'm telling you, once you get that ball, you see something, I see you're gone, man. I saw that one kickoff return. I was like, oh, my Lord, he's gone. Before I even knew it, I'm like, he's gone. It's a wrap. So, listen, I want to thank you very much. I know it's a short amount of time, but I just wanted to get you on camera just to kind of get your feeling for it. I appreciate you coming out. Anybody that you want to shout out before we head up out of here?
Shout out to my mom's.
She's an awesome woman.
Yes, sir. Yes,
she's an awesome woman. We were friends since high school. Tell you, that's one heck of a woman. She's raised one heck of a son. I always tell her that every day. So I appreciate you, sir. And thank you very much for coming on here, doing this interview with me. Enjoy your college, man. I hope that if a spring season happens, maybe we get to see you play some ball, man. I would love to see that.
Yes, sir. Most definitely.
All right. Appreciate you. And you enjoy the rest of your day. And then we'll talk soon, bro.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You're welcome anytime. Y'all know what time it is. Let's go. That's right, baby. It is time for the NFL Fallout Week 2. It went down this weekend. We got a lot to talk about. I love this beat, though. Come on. There we go. Oh, yes. So much to talk about over the weekend. We had one of the best slate of games that we've had in a minute. Sorry, excuse me. I had to get this little thingy thing in my ear. All right. So let's pull up the slate. Let's talk about it. Let's be about it. There's so much that happened this weekend in the NFL. It has been one heck of a ride. Let me see. Give me a second here. It's taking me a minute. There we go. Okay. So let's start. Let's go straight to the beginning. Bengals-Browns last Thursday. Browns beat the Bengals 35-30 in a game I didn't really think was actually going to be close. I thought that the Browns were supposed to come in and stomp them out, but Bengals came in almost trying to win it at the end. Joe Burrow looking like a quarterback, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. The Browns couldn't stop a paper bag. The Browns, sorry, couldn't hold rocks in a paper bag, essentially, ladies and gentlemen. They couldn't do nothing. Nick Chubb had a hell of a game. Kareem Hunt had a hell of a game. Baker Mayfield looked very much average, below average, in fact. Joe Burrow looked excellent, but the Bengals have no running game. It's sad because Joe Mixon was really, really good running back, and then it just kind of fell off. I don't know what's going on. No more Andy Dalton, but Joe Burrow's just going to do his thing. AJ Green wasn't there. It's kind of sad. Oh, no, he did. 3 catches for 29 yards. Your boy Travis Boyd. I think they're going to trade AJ Green, though. I don't think AJ Green's going to be there for too long, to be dead honest. I think this is – he should have been gone. He should have been traded. Injury prone. Scared to have him. I don't trust AJ Green. I just don't. But, you know, shout out to the Browns. That was a good game on Thursday night. Now that we've gotten the Thursday night mess out, let's get into the Sunday, Monday action. First and foremost, Giants-Bears in a competitive contest with Mitch Trubisky looking like a sloppy quarterback. And then Mitch Trubisky looking like Mitch Trubisky looking like a hell of a quarterback. And then Mitch Trubisky looking like a sorry-ass quarterback. But the Bears hold off the New York Giants. Seemingly, it's when Matt Nagy not calling the plays, Mitch Trubisky looks like a fucking genius. Matt Nagy calls the plays, Mitch Trubisky looks like paper. It was 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, then 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. That's not the way you run things. And the big news coming out of this one, though, is Big Quan. The highlights with the actual plan. Big Saquon Barkley out for the season. That's going to hurt the Giants. You might as well just book them for 0-16 for the rest of the season. They're not winning another game. I thought I had some faith in them. They play tough. Don't get me wrong. The defense is way better than last year. But this is – without Quan? Without Quan, it's going to be all bad. Stop the yawning. Stop it, James. Let me get my drink. Yeah, this is going to be a rough one. Deion Lewis had 10 carries. They couldn't get nothing on the ground. They're going to have to end up getting a free agent from somewhere. I don't know where, but somewhere. You think somebody told me that they signed Devontae Freeman? Is that a thing? I'm going to need some confirmation on that one. When these running back needy teams signed Devontae Freeman? I know that much. That I could tell you. The Rams stomped out the Eagles 37-19. Jared Goff looking like a beast, 20-27, but not like a beast. Not see, 20-27 would have gotten the Rams about 400 yards passing. Your boy Henderson ran 12 carries for 81 yards. Robert Woods had 3 carries, 19 yards. Cooper Kupp, 5 catches, 81. Tyler Higbee, 5 catches, 54. He had 3 touchdowns. Tyler Higbee had 3 touchdowns. That's something to look out for. That's an actual interesting stat right there. The Eagles, on the other hand, couldn't get nothing going. Carson Wentz, 2 picks, to the point where Jalen Hurst was actually warming up to get into this game and they decided not to put him in. Mike Sanders actually had a decent game, 20 carries, 95 yards. They got DeSean Jackson involved. They got Zach Ertz involved. And they couldn't do nothing with it. They couldn't. They really couldn't. Like, this is going to be a long season for the Eagles if they don't get Carson Wentz healthy. They're still facing problems on that end. I mean, he didn't get sacked, but he got pressured like a mug. Both teams lost fumbles. It was kind of sloppy, but the Rams did more in the 31 minutes than the Eagles did in their 28, a lot more, as you can tell. So shout out to the Los Angeles Rams on that one. Next we go Cowboys, Falcons. Falcons fans, how do you do it? How do you continuously blow big ass leads? I'm trying to figure this one out. You were up 29-10. 29-10. You can't blame Kyle Shanahan now. Shanahan's on the 49ers. Who are you going to blame? Y'all fired every single assistant? Assistants? When's going to be the point where we talk about maybe Dan Quinn is the problem? Maybe Dan Quinn's game management is the problem. Maybe we've been wrong about this the whole time. And this is seemingly where we're at now. This is what it seems like. How are you going to let the Cowboys score 30 unanswered points in the second half? I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Matt Ryan even had he had a great game, 24-36, 273 yards and 4 touchdowns. Todd Gurley had 21 carries for 61 yards, but only averaging, that's a 2.9 average a carry. They need some running back help. I would have never traded Devontae Freeman. Not actual physically traded, but I would have never got rid of Freeman. I would have brought Gurley and had Freeman on. This is ridiculous. Dak Prescott, 34 for 47 for 450. Making the case for that big-ass contract he wants. Zeke Elliott, 22 carries for 89 yards. That's not bad performance by the Cowboys in that comeback victory. Dak Prescott sure earned his medal in that one. Then next, it was the Tom Brady coming out party. He took that motivation. Tom Brady said, I'm motivated. I'm ready to go play football. And he put up numbers. He put up 23 of 35 for 217 yards and had a touchdown and an interception. But they won by 14 points, which that's what matters. Leonard Fournette had 2 touchdowns. Jones II had a touchdown, which is always nice. Mike Evans had 7 catches, 104 yards. This is just a little coming out party. The big thing coming out of this game, however, is Rob Gronkowski had a big-ass goose egg. He managed a triple single, ladies and gentlemen. Zero touchdowns, 0 catches, 0 yards. He did absolutely. He had the triple zero, baby. Triple zero. Teddy Bridgewater actually put up better stats, but he threw 2 picks. That's not good. 2 weeks in a row. Turnovers is costing the Panthers some games. I have to go back to the drawing board. Then we had 49ers versus the Jets in the saddest game of the year, where the 49ers lost Bosa, they lost Solomon Thomas, for the both of them for the year. Mostert's out for 6 weeks. Garoppolo's out for 4 to 6, and also the injuries that the Niners already had, and still were able to beat the New York Jets 31-13. Nick Mullins went 8 of 11 for 71. He threw a pick. Garoppolo was on a roll 14 of 16 for 131, two touchdowns. Mostert was on a roll. Jerick McKinnon, three carries for 77 yards. That man is on a roll. This is going to be something else. Now we are in the worried zone for the 49ers. This is where we have to worry now. We're freaking scared. I don't know what to do. I don't. What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to tell you? As one of the biggest 49er fans out there, what am I supposed to tell you? I can't tell you shit. We're fucked. We can only pray that we win like three games. If we can get three out of four, the three out of four that Jimmy G is gone, we just might be okay. But it's going to be a rough one. These next 4 to 6 weeks, this is going to be rough. But I don't know what the hell we're going to do on defense, to be honest. Nick Bosa was that dude. And without Nick Bosa, that's going to be a tough one. The Jets looking mediocre as usual. Frank Gore actually started this game. Le'Veon Bell did not play in this game. I expect Le'Veon Bell to be traded somewhere in a few. That's all I can really tell you. Another news, Steelers-Broncos. Steelers beat the Broncos. The Broncos put up a good fight at the end of the game, though, too. Drew Lock was in five passing plays before he got injured and Jeff Driscoll took over. Melvin Gordon had 70 yards rushing off of 19 carries. Not bad. Not bad. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. Big Ben, though, went 29 for 41 for 311 ones, two touchdowns, threw a pick. James Conner had 16 carries, 106 yards, recovered from that injury. Juju didn't have a touchdown, but he had seven catches for 48 yards. Johnson and Claypool. He has some stats in there. Titans Jaguars, and for those that missed that game, that one went down to the wire. That one was a really, really great game all the way to the end. Gardner Minshew making a case for being the Jaguars' starting quarterback from here on out. He had three touchdowns with two interceptions, including the pick that ended up costing them the game. They found a running back in Robinson. They have. G.J. Chark is their big receiver. Cole is their speedster. They got a nice little squad. They came close to beating Tennessee. They came back and almost beat them. But those Titans, you know when them Titans come. Derrick Henry, 25 carries, 84 yards. Ryan Tannehill, four touchdowns, 18-24 for 239. The minimal with the maximum. He got all the receivers involved. It was a real good time for everybody. Lions and Packers, not much to say here. The Packers are doing packing things. The Lions are doing liony things. That's just what it is. The Colts and the Vikings, the Colts have impressed me. But more importantly, Jonathan Taylor is impressing me. The man, the running back, the number one rushing record holder for Wisconsin, and I think all of college football. Jonathan Taylor, 26 carries, 101, 3.9, and a touchdown, making Phillip Rivers' jobs a lot easier. He only had to do the bare minimum to win. But my man, Allie Cox, five catches, 111 yards from the tight end position. T.Y. Hilton was barely a thing. The Vikings could not stop a tight end from doing anything. So shout out to the Colts. The Colts then just might be back. Cardinals stomping out the Washington football team. Kyler Murray doing Kyler Murray things. Dwayne Haskins doing Dwayne Haskins things. Drake is doing good. Washington's running game that they had last week is now non-existent. But even though they did get a touchdown, but it's non-existent. They're going to have to find a running back somewhere. Ravens stomped out the Texans. We already knew that was going to happen. Lamar Jackson had a great game, 18-24, 204, and then 16 carries for 54 yards. Deshaun Watson, 25-36, 275, a touchdown, and a pick. That just is what it is. Call it spade a spade. Chiefs and Chargers going into overtime. Chiefs winning. I would think that it was the fact that the Chargers came out the gate with their rookie quarterback because Tyrod Taylor, something happened to Tyrod Taylor with his chest, couldn't play the game. All comes them damn Chargers. Chargers playing tough. Chargers playing tough. But I told you, it's going to be a 1-15 season for this Chargers squad. This is going to be a rough go for this squad. They might play tough, but I don't think they can win too many games. Seahawks beat the Patriots 35-30. Came down to a last-minute run. But I tell you, that's not even a story that came out of this game. The story is the fact that Cam Newton and Russell Wilson put on a clinic. A freaking clinic. They just look just like what they normally do. We turn back the clock. Back, what is it, 2014? Them dudes just went at it. That was a hell of a Monday night game. And finally, the Raiders break in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas to beat the Saints. The Michael Thomas-less Saints. Drew Brees looking mad mortal. Raiders looking mad good. Josh Jacobs is absolutely a mother-loving beast. Although Kamara had two touchdowns and Drew Brees had a touchdown, a pick, and it wasn't enough for 312. Sorry. It's not enough. When Derek Carr goes for 28 for 38 for 282, Josh Jacobs goes for 88, Richard goes for two carries, 26 yards. My man Waller, 12 catches, 103. That's, you know, sometimes things just go where you want to. But it was a good game. It was a good win. So that's all we got. That's the whole show. We went over the NFL, went over the NCAA, went over all the good stuff. So we're going to have to see you Saturday for the NFL Week 3 rundown. But until then, I want to first thank Devin Perkins. I want to thank his mom for letting me have him on the show here to talk about the NCAA and how they failed that they're student athletes. I hope you guys enjoyed the report that I did, some of the news clips I did, the revenue, things like that. Maybe we'll do more stuff like that. You never know. But until next time, it's a Saturday. I'm your boy, Hollywood J. Black. Next time we'll have Big Sin. This is the Overtime Sports Show. And we have this thing. Deuces.